So, have you ever found yourself looking at, say, two different approaches to something, maybe two strategies, and just wondered, will one always do better than the other?
Yeah, or maybe wondering if, a good start actually guarantees things stay positive down the line.
Exactly that. That kind of fundamental question about comparing things and whether positive trends stick around, especially when things get complicated. Well, that's what we're diving into today.
That's right. We're digging into some pretty fascinating research from a technical paper. It's all about these things called non-linear stochastic fractional heat equations.
Okay, whoa, that's definitely a mouthful.
It absolutely is. Sounds pretty intimidating, I know. But the goal here for you listening is really to pull out the main ideas, the core insights, make them clear, maybe even interesting without getting totally bogged down in the weeds of the really complex math.
Right. Think of this as your guide through some, well, pretty advanced concepts. We're focusing today on understanding when you can actually compare the outcomes from these equations, and also, really importantly, when solutions that start out positive tend to stay positive.
We want to get at the why behind it and maybe touch on what it could mean in, real-world contexts.
Okay, so let's start there then. That term, non-linear stochastic fractional heat equation.
Yeah.
Can we break that down a bit? What's each part telling us?
Let's do it. So fundamentally, it's an equation about how something changes, both over time and across space.
Okay.
Now, the fractional part, that's quite interesting. It basically means the change at one point isn't just about its immediate neighbors. It kind of considers influences from further away, like a memory effect.
So not just what's right next door.
Exactly. Think about maybe how something spreads online. It can jump, right? Not just move step by step. This fractional operator captures that mathematically. It connects to things called astable processes.
And those show up where?
Oh, all sorts of places. Physics, how populations spread in biology, even in finance, modeling those big unexpected market jumps sometimes.
Okay, so fractional means long-range influence or jumps. What about stochastic?
Right, stochastic. That tells us there's randomness involved. Specifically, something called space-time white noise.
White noise, like radio static.
Kind of like that, yeah, but imagine it happening everywhere, in space and all the time. Tiny random kicks constantly pushing the system around.
Okay, random fluctuations all over. Got it. And nonlinear.
Nonlinear just means the relationships aren't simple straight lines. If you double the cause, you don't necessarily double the effect. It's more complicated, maybe involving the quantity, multiplying itself, things like that.
Makes sense.
And we also need the starting point, the initial conditions. What's cool about this research is it looks at really general starting points, not just smooth distributions, but even something like a single point source.
Like all the stuff concentrated right at one spot at the beginning.
Exactly. Mathematically, that's often a Dirac delta measure. Think of it like an instantaneous burst of energy at one location.
Right, like the spark that starts a fire.
Precisely. So you have this complex equation, fractional effects, noise, nonlinearity, maybe these spiky starting points. A big question is, if you start with one initial state that's, let's say, bigger than another, does it stay bigger?
Okay. That leads us to the comparison principle, right?
Exactly. It's like asking if one company starts with more market share, will it generally keep that advantage, even with all the market noise and complex interactions?
Okay, so what does the research say about that? Are there different kinds of comparison?
Yes, there are. There's a weak comparison principle. It
Yeah.
basically says if your starting condition one is less than or equal to starting condition two, sort of intuitively has no more stuff anywhere, then the solution for one will stay less than or equal to the solution for two.
Over time.
Over time, yes, and with probability one. So it's almost certain.
Okay, that sounds logical. What about a strong version?
The strong comparison principle is, well, stronger. It says if starting condition one is strictly less than condition two, meaning there's definitely some difference, it's not identical, then the solution for one will remain strictly less than the solution for two over time, again, with probability one.
So even a small initial edge is maintained.
That's the idea. And it's worth mentioning, the standard stochastic heat equation you might have heard of is just a special case of this fractional one. And that standard one connects to other really key equations, like the KPZ equation, Kardar-Parisi-Zhang, which models things like growing surfaces.
So understanding this helps with those too.
It can definitely provide insights, yeah. Seeing how comparison works in this broader fractional setting is valuable.
Got it. Now, you mentioned earlier that a lot of previous work assumed smooth initial conditions. What's the big deal about extending this to more general starting points like that Dirac delta point source?
Well, smooth functions are mathematically convenient. They're easier to handle. But often, real-world starting points aren't smooth at all. Think of, I don't know, a chemical spill starting at one specific point.
Right. Very localized.
Exactly. So how do you measure the size of that? And how does that tiny point source evolve with the fractional diffusion and the noise? Does it just dissipate instantly? Does it stay positive if it started positive? These general initial conditions pose real technical challenges.
Which this research tackled.
Yes. And a key finding is that the weak comparison principle holds up even for these very general initial conditions, including the Dirac delta.
So even starting from a single point.
Even then, if initial condition A is less than or equal to B, in the right mathematical sense, like having less mass or energy, then solution A stays less than or equal to solution B, the initial ranking holds.
You had an example with the Dirac delta, I think.
Right. Like if you start with one burst at zero, let's call that zero, versus starting with two bursts at zero, two zero, the solution starting from zero will always be less than or equal to the solution starting from two zero.
Okay. That makes sense. Does this weak comparison tell us anything else interesting?
It does, actually. It helps strengthen our understanding of a phenomenon called intermittency.
Intermittency, what's that?
It's where the solution shows these really high peaks, like bursts of intense activity separated by periods where it's very, very low, almost inactive.
Oh, like occasional big flare-ups.
Exactly. Think of sporadic wildfires, maybe. The weak comparison principle helps make the mathematical description of this bursty behavior more rigorous, moving towards something called full intermittency.
Interesting. So it helps characterize those spikes.
Yeah.
What about the strong comparison? Did that hold up too for these general cases?
Yes, they proved that too. The strong comparison principle also works. If initial condition A is genuinely less than B, not equal, there's a real difference somewhere, then solution A stays strictly less than solution B over time, probability one.
So again, even a tiny initial advantage persists and keeps the solution separate.
That's right. It really underscores the degree of predictability even within these complex, random systems. Initial differences matter and they tend to last.
That's quite a statement. Okay, let's shift gears slightly to the other big question. Positivity. If you start with something non-negative, like a density, it can't be less than zero. Does it stay positive? Maybe even strictly greater than zero.
Yeah, this is super important for applications. If you're modeling, say, a population, you want to know if it can just vanish entirely from an area where it started.
Right. Does it go extinct locally?
Exactly. And the paper gives quantitative estimates, actual numbers about how close the solution can get to zero. There's a key theorem, theorem 1.4, that provides mathematical bounds.
So not just, yes, it stays positive, but here's how positive it's likely to stay.
Precisely. For initial conditions that are positive measures, like our Dirac delta, a positive burst they found a bound involving a double logarithm. It sounds technical, but what it means is that the probability of the solution getting extremely close to zero is incredibly small.
Like super unlikely to hit zero.
Vanishingly unlikely, yes. It suggests a really strong tendency to maintain strict positivity. Once there's something there, it's very hard for the model to completely erase it.
What if the start is more like a regular function, but still non-negative, like a smooth hump that's positive somewhere?
For that case, like a non-negative continuous function that's not zero everywhere, they found a similar type of bound for positivity, at least within the region where it initially started positive. Yeah. The exact math is slightly different, different exponent, but the message is the same.
It stays positive where it started positive.
Generally speaking, yes, with very high probability.
Does this tendency to stay positive tell us anything about how the initial stuff spreads out?
It does, quite strongly. These results suggest the solution usually doesn't stay confined to a limited area. If you start localized, its influence spreads out.
It doesn't have compact support over time, is that the term?
That's the technical term, yes. The influence keeps spreading. The positivity reinforces this. It doesn't just spread thin and disappear. It maintains some positive level as it expands.
Like dropping ink in water, it spreads everywhere eventually.
That's a good analogy. It might get very diluted far away, but the positivity results suggest it doesn't actually become zero. They even connect this to models of branching particle systems, particles moving, splitting, multiplying. The equation solution is like the density of those particles.
And the positivity means the particles persist and spread.
Exactly.
Okay, this is built on some heavy math, obviously. Can you give us just a quick flavor of the techniques used without, writing equations on the air?
Sure. A key strategy was approximation, They approximated these tricky general initial conditions using sequences of nicer, smoother functions.
Okay, start simple and build up.
Right. Then they could bring in powerful tools for stochastic analysis. Things like Itô's formula, which is essential for calculus with randomness, and also techniques called large deviation estimates.
Which do what, roughly?
They help calculate the probability of rare events, like the probability of the solution dipping very close to zero, which we found is very small.
Gotcha. Anything else?
They also prove some regularity properties of the solution, showing they are holder continuous, which basically means they aren't excessively jumpy or jagged. They have some degree of smoothness.
So they behave somewhat reasonably despite the noise.
Yes. And crucially, they checked that as you rewind time back towards zero, the solution actually matches the initial condition you started with, a sanity check.
Makes sense. Okay, so wrapping this up, what are the big takeaways from this deep dive for us?
I'd say two main things. First, these comparison principles, both weak and strong, are really robust. They work even for very general, non-smooth starting points in these complex fractional heat equations. Initial order tends to be preserved.
Okay, comparison holds.
Yeah.
And second?
Second, solutions that start non-negative really want to stay strictly positive. There's a strong inherent positivity, and we even have ways to quantify how unlikely it is for them to get near zero.
And these aren't just math games.
No, definitely not. These mathematical properties can have real implications for understanding systems modeled by these equations, whether it's how things diffuse, how populations evolve, maybe even aspects of financial markets.
Right. So even with all the randomness and those weird fractional long-range effects, there's still this underlying order. Things can be compared, and positivity tends to persist. That's kind of the aha moment here, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. It reveals some fundamental rules governing these seemingly chaotic processes.
So for our listeners who followed along and are intrigued, where could they look next?
Well, depending on your interests, you could look into applications of fractional calculus or fractional diffusion in your own field, yeah. Physics, biology, finance, engineering. It's popping up more and more.
See how it's actually used.
Exactly. Or you could explore the connections to things like the KPZ equation we mentioned, or that particle system interpretation. That's a whole fascinating area. And of course, for the mathematically inclined, the techniques themselves, stochastic PDEs, are a huge active area of research.
Plenty to explore.
Yeah.
Okay, that leads us to our final thought for you, the listener. Thinking about these principles comparison, this drive towards positivity, how do you see them playing out in the complex systems you observe?
Yeah, what does it really mean for predictability or for the resilience of certain states when you have both these long-range fractional influences and constant random noise?
It's that bridge between the abstract math and the messy real world. Something to think about. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.